Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. You're invited to join us on air, asking your questions by calling in on the local rate phone numbers in the UK and the US, which can be found on ldnradio.org. Thank you for joining us. Today our guest speaker is Dr. Thomas Cowan, who practices holistic medicine in San Francisco and prescribes LDN. He also has a very exciting new book called Human Hearts, Cosmic Hearts, which we'll be discussing at the end of the show. This show is sponsored by Dixon's Chemist, who are the experts in LDN and associated treatments in the UK. Dixon's Chemist are the most cost-effective for LDN in all forms within the UK and Europe, maintaining safety standards far in excess of what is required. Why would you choose to get your LDN from anywhere else? Call 0141 404 6545 today to speak to their LDN experts. Thank you. So, Tom, tell us about your book. I think it's got a very intriguing title, so I'm guessing it's all about the heart. Maybe you can tell us.
So the title is Human Heart, Cosmic Heart, and we actually made a website to support the book and put other articles related of interest called humanheartcosmicheart.com. So I would encourage all your listeners to check that out. And as I think I mentioned, there was basically two reasons I wrote the book. One was because everybody more or less thinks that the heart is so-called pumps the blood. In other words, the reason the blood moves around the body is because the heart pushes it. And the first reason for writing the book was to essentially point out that that's, for lack of a better word, ridiculous, and there's no possibility that the heart pumps the blood around the body. And if that's true, then the questions arise of, number one, why does the blood move around the body? And number two, what is the heart doing there in the first place if it's not so-called pumping the blood? And my part of the thesis of that is once people get away from thinking of the heart as a pump, it opens up entire worlds of information to understand all kinds of things, but particularly what our amazing hearts actually do. If you're stuck in this mechanical pump model, you miss it all, and you miss a large part of the actual beauty of life to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
The second part, sorry. The second part was equally as entrenched in our culture and in our science and in our medicine is the theory that blockages in the coronary arteries are the sole cause of heart attacks. And again, the second part of the book was to look at that theory, which is what it is, to realize that it's actually also basically ridiculous. It can't possibly be the case. And if that's true, you know, what is the role of blocked arteries, and why do people actually have heart attacks if it's not from blocked arteries? And again, you know, we have a $1 trillion industry that's based on lowering cholesterol because cholesterol supposedly blocks the arteries, even though now nobody actually believes that anymore. But we put people on low-fat diets and we give them diabetes based on that theory. We do, you know, billions of dollars of bypasses and stents and angioplasties, all based on this coronary artery blockage theory, of which even the Mayo Clinic in 2003, in a major review article, states, or in a sense proves, that for the vast majority of patients, stents, bypasses, and angioplasties, while they do relieve pain, they do nothing for improving the longevity or the survivalship of the patient. So we need a whole new look at this problem. We need to turn our gaze from what's happening in the coronary arteries, which is where all of conventional medicine and even up till now, all of alternative medicine has been focused, to what actually happens in the heart. And so that's where my focus was.
Mm-hmm. So where did you start? How did you get your research for the book?
So, I've been connected with anthroposophical medicine for 35 or so years, maybe even actually more, 40 almost. And that's the medicine of Rudolf Steiner and biodynamics and Waldorf schools. And one of his fundamental claims in science, not that he was right about everything, but he was certainly an interesting guy. And he said, it's crucial that humans learn that the heart is not a pump. And so that idea intrigued me for decades, trying to figure out why. I ended up going over this with an engineer in Royal Oak, Michigan, named Ralph Marinelli, whose article on the heart is not a pump is posted on that website. And after a while, it just became clear. And just to give you one example. So we have this 1-pound organ muscle called the heart, and we have enough blood vessels in our body to encircle the earth 3 different times. Or if you spread them out side by side, it would cover 3 different football fields, or football pitches, I think you say in English.
We do, yeah.
So that's a huge amount of blood. And we're told that this 1-pound muscle pushes this very viscous fluid through this gigantic amount of tubes. And even though the stuff in the blood, the red blood cells, the white blood cells, et cetera, are basically the diameter of most of the tubes called the capillaries. So how is it even possible that this organ pushes all this fluid through these, hundreds of miles or more of tubes? And the answer is it's actually not possible. It gets even worse than that, which I won't necessarily go into right now. But once you go from that, and then you can start reading, everything from engineering studies to, physiological data on what happens in the heart, it turns out there's a vortex created in the heart, or a spiral, which that increases the momentum of the heart. It turns out that the heart actually sends little vortices of red blood cells to different organs, depending on the needs of that different organs. It turns out that the heart actually packages up little pieces of itself. If there's a cut in your leg, and sends it directly to that cut to be used as a Band-Aid. There's a whole world of information that's clearly in the medical literature about what the heart does that's different than this pumping action, which is what it actually doesn't do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got into it. And again, a lot of those research articles I actually have posted and in the future will post on my website, because the goal is to develop a whole sort of community of people who are trying to create a heart-centered way of life. And the first thing we have to do is get away from the mechanical pump model, because that's a model of the dead earth and studying people as if they're essentially non-living entities, and it's basically killing us. So that's one. The other idea about the what causes heart attacks, kind of came also serendipitously from being contacted by a Brazilian head of cardiology at a major cardiology center. And he wanted to run by me his idea of the so-called myogenic theory of heart disease, which produced a medicine called strophanthus, which was much more effective than the usual treatments of bypasses and stents and statins in preventing further heart attacks or having people die of heart disease. And, you know, again, I resisted it for a little while because thinking that it was all about the plaque is like mother's milk. But, you know, the evidence is very clear that it's actually not. And even it was controversial, this theory in normal cardiology for a long time until, for unusual reasons, let's just say, the coronary artery theory prevailed, possibly or maybe because of the commercial interests involved. So it's a fascinating story. But again, just to give you a flavor of it, I have all the time people come to me and they say, they have a 95% blockage in their artery, and their cardiologist said if they don't do a bypass soon, they're going to die if it blocks 97%. And what I learned to say to myself is, if you say you have a 95% blockage in your artery, meanwhile, a lot of those people, you know, have minimal symptoms like shortness of breath, or the guy last week walked up a hill and he just didn't feel as well. How did he even walk up a hill with 5% blood flow to your heart? Like, how is that even possible? And then you mean to tell me that if you block from 5%, which is basically zero, to 3%, which is also basically zero, that's what's going to do you in? And frankly, I'm not buying it. 5% is 0%. And we have to figure out why that person is still up and walking, even though they have 5% blood flow. And 90% of the procedures in this country are done on people who have 5% blood flow, yet are basically minimally symptomatic. And these procedures have not been shown to improve the length of their life.
Well, that's amazing. And all of this is in your book, I take it.
All of it is in my book. The book is not, it's meant for anybody from somebody with no science education to a cardiologist to read. So, you know, there are studies and references, you know, you sort of have to do that. But my intention was to write a book that anybody can read, you know, like, I wouldn't call it a page turner, although some people have said it is, but, you know, understandable, clear evidence. And then I was hoping that the follow-up with the more involved science stuff, that would be on my website. So that's sort of the structure. So yes, anybody can read that book. Anybody can understand it. It's not rocket science. It's not like one dry study after another. There are studies, there is evidence. I'm not the first one to think of these things, but, I put it together in a way that the intention was anybody with any normal education could easily follow what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, how do we go about keeping a healthy heart? What should we be doing?
That's a great question, but... it's interesting because the answer to that comes from the science of how blood moves. And if you look at the flow of fluids in biological systems, the energy for charging up the systems that creates the electrical impulse that creates the flow, and I'm in a sense deliberately being vague, mm-hmm. but you can read more about that. But the energy for that is sunlight, earth energy, the earth's electromagnetic field, and actually the touch of another human being or even a dog or a cat, another living being. So the first answer to that question is people need to spend more time in nature, in the sunshine, walking, hope best with bare feet on the ocean, holding the hand of someone they love. If everybody did that for an hour a day, that would probably reduce heart disease by 20% in whatever country you're talking about. Now, the next thing is to eat a liberal, meaning a fair amount of good fats, which are coconut oil, olive oil, grass-fed butter or ghee, and that our predominant source of energy, fuel, should be good fats and particularly not refined carbohydrates. Any culture that eats carbohydrates, particularly refined carbohydrates, as their energy will end up with heart disease. The cultures that didn't, that ate basically high fat, good fat, modest protein, lots of vegetable diet, they more or less never had heart disease. So if people could do those two things, that would go a long way towards resolving this epidemic of heart disease in all Western industrialized countries.
And what does smoking, does that play a part in heart disease?
Yes, it does. And interestingly, two of the three consistent risk factors for heart disease that continue on through the decades, not high-fat diets, not cholesterol, but the three ones that really have been borne out are stress, diabetes, and smoking. Now, the interesting thing about those, all of those, is none of them have any effect on atherosclerosis or plaque development in major arteries. We all know, for instance, that diabetes affects the small blood vessels, not the large blood vessels. Yet, we know that diabetes is a risk factor for heart attacks, and we're told that small blood vessels have no effect on coronary, heart attack risk. So how can that be? The same thing with smoking. Smoking deteriorates your small blood vessels, your capillaries. We're told that capillaries have no effect on heart disease. That's why we don't do bypasses for capillaries. We do bypasses for large coronary arteries. Yet we know that smoking is not good for your heart. It causes people to have heart attacks. So there's all these discrepancies, even in the basic research, basic science of this. Yes, smoking, diabetes, and stress are bad for your heart. They affect the capillaries. They affect the metabolism in your heart. And those are the things that cause heart attacks, not the plaque in your coronary vessels.
Mm-hmm. You spoke there about diet. What's your views on taking supplements, and which supplements would you recommend?
Well, my view on taking supplements depends, of course, on the supplement, and it depends also on what I'm trying to treat. You know, I've long said that, at least as a medical doctor and in my practice, I rarely, if ever, give people a supplement because it's, quote, good for them. I give them a supplement or a medicine to take because, you know, their foot hurts, and I say, take LDN for 6 months or whatever and see if your foot doesn't hurt. That's not because it's good for them. It's because they have some disease process that I want to try to affect by what I'm telling the person to do. So what I found as far as supplements, now we're not talking medicines here particularly, if we're talking about heart disease, it helps if you add extra vitamin K2. Vitamin K2 improves the metabolism of the heart, and it directs the calcium towards the bones and away from the blood vessels. Both of those are helpful. K2 is a fat-soluble substance which is found most concentrated in things like emu oil and natto, which is a fermented soybean. There's also some in miso. There's also some in sauerkraut. And there's also some in aged Gouda cheese and brie cheese. To make it simpler, most of my heart patients take emu oil, which is probably the richest in K2, and that helps their make appropriate calcification. Another supplement that I use for heart patients in particular is a form of vitamin E. Vitamin E was shown by the Shute brothers, two medical doctors in Canada. In the 40s, they treated 10,000 patients with angina. Over 80% had a clear and permanent remission, no surgery, no nothing, just 100 milligrams of vitamin E twice a day. And vitamin E has a lot of positive benefits, including improving blood flow and including improving the cellular metabolism of the heart cells. So pretty much all my heart patients take a product called Tocomins, which is just the sort of modern form of vitamin E, 100 milligrams twice a day. And those are the two, you know, if we're talking about heart, those are the two main supplements. But I also always go back to diet. It all starts with diet and how we live, whether we move our bodies, have lives that are, you know, as stress-free as possible. We get out in the sun, hold hands, or have some physical connection with somebody we love, and have also an expanded view of life. Having a dry, mechanical view of reality is not a very good exercise for your health.
And for diet, over here in England, organic food is very, very expensive. I know it's better for you. It hasn't got all the chemicals, etc. on it. Could you just give us a brief overview of what you would say is a healthy diet?
I mean, so first of all, expensive or not, I mean, I wouldn't eat non-organic food if at all possible. I understand people have financial constraints, but I'm telling you, if you have any chance of growing your own vegetables, I would do that. A healthy diet is very simple. It's liberal amounts of good fats, which is grass-fed butter, coconut oil, and, you know, the best quality, freshest olive oil. Those are the three main fats. A modest amount of protein, which, if you wanted numbers, and that includes eggs, fish, meat, poultry, lamb, you know, all the protein foods. About a size of a deck of cards twice a day. That's about average. Lots of different vegetables, you know, root vegetables, leaf vegetables, fruit vegetables like zucchini, lots of different colors, you know, 10, 20 a day if possible. As many as you can get, cooked, raw, blanched, steamed, baked, whatever is appropriate. Then some fermented food, sauerkraut, miso, natto, soup broth, and berries or locally grown fruit for dessert. And that's the diet. A few seeds and nuts mixed in. Very simple. No refined food. No GMO food. For me, no non-organic food. I just cannot see eating pesticides or GMO foods.
And what about rice? Do you eat rice?
You know, so that you're talking about are grains and richer carbohydrates appropriate? I would say yes, but in sparing amounts. And if I have somebody who really needs remediation, whether it's autoimmune disease or heart disease, and I, by the way, think this sort of GAPS type diet or low carbohydrate, low grain diet is a perfect complement to using low-dose naltrexone. So some of those people, I would say, not rice for a while. Other people who are not so bad, you know, non-gluten grains or very heirloom wheat, are probably okay if they're tolerated.
Mm-hmm. So would you like to give people your website where they can learn more about the book?
So there's actually two websites that people might be interested in. There's the Heart website, which is Human Heart, Cosmic Heart, all spelled out one word, .com, humanheartcosmicheart.com. And just as a side note, the importance of vegetable diversity in the diet was so key to me that my family and I started a entire business devoted on to increasing the vegetable diversity in people's diets. You know, it started out as a fun project, and now it's a bona fide business, which is really helping people achieve vegetable diversity in their diets. And that website is drcowansgarden.com, which is drcowansgarden, drcowansgarden.com. And you can learn all about vegetable diversity. I even wrote a book, which you can see there, called How and Why to Eat More Vegetables.
Well, I personally like to make vegetable soup, and I make it in a big batch and then freeze it. So that's a good way of getting vegetables into your diet, isn't it? The one thing I was going to mention...
Every morning.
Sorry?
I eat vegetable soup with anywhere from 5 to 12 vegetables every morning, almost.
Wow, that's pretty good going. We try to get it once a day. But like smoothies, if you have too many fruits, is that really high in sugar if you're a diabetic?
Or if you're any person. I generally tell people the ratio of vegetables to fruit should be about 80% vegetables, 20% fruit. Mm. And if you're anywhere near a diabetic, a pre-diabetic or an overt diabetic, that ratio should probably go to 90 or even 95% to 5%. So fruit is good, but if you eat too much of it, there's too many carbohydrates, too many, you know, easy, accessible carbohydrates, sugars. So even that sometimes needs to be lessened.
Mm-hmm. I know you said you have soup every day, but do you make vegetable smoothies?
Not so much. I mean, we could do that with our powders, but I don't like that so much. I like, you know, real cooked food more than I like smoothies.
Mm. That's fine. And if people want to get hold of you and ask you questions, are there contact forms on your website or websites?
Yes. Okay. Yes. They can. There's info. They go to somebody, and then some of them come to me if they're appropriate. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
I will get them.
Oh, good. Well, it's been really interesting, and I think everybody out there ought to go out and buy the book and find out how your heart works, how you can look after it, and hopefully live longer.
Great. Well, thank you for this interview.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Well, I can see we've had 2,500 listeners, so I'm sure that everybody is really interested in learning this, and I would like to thank Dr. Thomas Cowan very, very much for sharing his experience with us. DN Health Tracker app, called MyLDN, is available free for Androids, iPhones, Macs, PCs, iPads and notebooks. The app allows you to keep track of all your medications, pain levels, sleep, quality of life, etc. You can print out graphs and charts to take to your doctor. Full details on the LDN Research Trust website. You can keep a journal so you won't ever forget anything again, and set alarms. The app is free and all your information is held securely and anonymously. By using the app, you'll be taking part in the world's largest LDN survey anonymously. Any questions, please email me, Linda@ldnrt.com. www.dixonscemist.org. This show is sponsored by Dixon's Chemist, who are the experts in LDN and associated treatments in the UK. Dixon's Chemist are the most cost-effective for LDN in all forms within the UK and Europe, maintaining safety standards far in excess of what is required. Why would you choose to get your LDN from anywhere else? Call 0141 404 6545 today to speak to their LDN experts. Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.